in this podcast, I want to cover some ideas to do with memory and learning and the structure of the brain. Basically, the structure of the brain, quite really. This is Peter Hill Explains, where I discuss things scientific. To put you in the picture, you've all done tests and come across a curly question which has really sort of tested you. You've got your surface knowledge, but you've got the surface knowledge in there, sort of the facts, the dot points, but they ask you a bit more of a complex question, let's say a 3-mark, 5-mark, sort of semi-essay question with a bit of information at the start, and you have to apply the knowledge. And sometimes you just get caught out, no matter how well you study. The sort of general scenario that I want to paint for you is that you've gone through your course and you've written some short study notes and revised them from time and time again. Quickly looked over them every night and written them out and remembered them in point form, that sort of the surface knowledge, and you're getting ready for your test, and you get a phone call from a friend and say, hey, can you do this question? You look at the question, and, oh, there's a whole area I haven't really studied. You quickly work out which area's missed and quickly do some study over the top of it, and it goes in, and just the night before, an all-nighter. You're not intending to do an all-nighter, but you sort of have to. It's an emergency situation. You've, in all honesty, when you've structured your good-looking notes early on, you haven't taken into account of new emphases which are coming into the course later on. So you get into the test, it comes along, and you can remember the knowledge, but it's a little bit flaky. It's only if only you could have had a bigger chance to learn it. And let's step back into the physiology of the brain in terms of getting those surface memories and getting them integrated into experience. More complex knowledge is something which happens during sleep. And often you do need a sleep before an exam. It's quite often that you will do better before an exam having a good night's sleep. And if you look at the examples of good night's sleeps, one of the earliest examples is Alexander the Great. Before his great battle, which he fought the Persians with, he was confident, he fell into a deep sleep, and they had to rouse him ready for the battle, and then he was just all switched on, ready to go. Whereas in contrast, so he's someone who's in history a good sleeper. Napoleon, on the other hand, was always a short hours sleeper, military grade sleeper, ready to act at the night, and would study and have cat naps during the day, and he would rest. And famously, in the Battle of Waterloo, they said he was probably a little bit sleep deprived. There's a few other factors to do with how the French lost the Battle of Waterloo, but he definitely didn't have the command structure and the whole idea. It was a bit of a big effort. That was in 1815, after being losing in 1812 and being put up off to the island of Elba. Now, firstly, we'll have to talk about the brain. And talking about the brain is a bit of a misnomer, because there's actually a fair number of brains which have evolved and have all stuck themselves on the spinal cord. And basically, sort of the very top ones you can see is the cerebral, and that's the brain which you automatically exercise. Recommended, that's grey, white matter, that little curly stuff. But behind it, under it, is called the cerebellum, the war brain, which has got your motor reflexes. So if you have to do a tap dance or do something which requires a lot of coordination, the exact sequence is stored in that sort of cauliflower thing called the cerebellum at the moment. And in order, in fact, I found coaching that if you can actually distract someone to concentrate on something else while they let their cerebellum focus, you can get fantastic short-term results out of them. Just a coaching tip. But to give you an idea of multiple brains, you can actually cut a chicken's head off. And not that I've ever seen it done. And they all run around, because what you've done is if you've just chopped off the thinking brain, you've left the actual war coordination brain just struggling around at the base. In fact, there's even a brain beneath that, which is the brain stem. In the brain stem, there's a whole lot of other features to do with sort of base instincts and drives and a whole heap of other things, breathing and regulation. And so, in essence, as the brains have evolved, the spinal cord has evolved, more brains have been added on. In fact, in evolution, eyesight came relatively, all came early, but then the more brains have packed in, and so the vision is at the back of your head, and the brain has actually had to keep the eyes wide at the front, and the actual rest of the more intelligent, or the more deeper thought brain has grown in between. So that's just hardly even caught on the actual structure of the brain. In fact, there's a sort of general misconception that the brain is full of, it is full of nerves, axons and dendrites and things, synapses all going together. But there's really only one in 10 cells. There's, for each one of those nerve cells, there are the 10 ganglion cells, which are sort of general purpose brain cells doing various things, sort of adjusting, supporting, cleaning and stuff like that. And also tubes and drainage tubes for fluid, because as the brain works, it creates a lot of rubbish. And that has to be removed, and there's veins and all these plumbing and nerves going through the brain, which is important. So the major thing here is that the memory is stored in the brain, and I won't go into the actual where the memory is stored. It's the pre-processing to store that memory. And so that thing is that in this case, talking about the question which you sort of studied, the memory hasn't really been fully processed, and it's one of those things that evolution, if you've sort of been hunting a tiger for a while back in the prehistoric time, you don't go, oh, I know, I want to go back and you study and think and do this stuff that we do, the studying. You just sit around and the brain actually takes care of the learning itself. So there's a lot of automatic learning if you can actually just be in a quiet place and contemplate and probably do other things, and the learning happens in the background, like a background app in your computer. And one of the things that we have found is that this generally happens when the computer is not got demands placed on it and it's a sleep state. So the important point we want to say here is being able to get some regular sleep. And to get regular sleep, there's a number of amazing things which goes on. So prepare to be shocked at this point in time. So I'm just going to give a linear explanation rather than a surprise explanation. So in your eyes, you all know that we're light sensitive. And if you have bright lights, particularly blue lights, that sets your clock, your brain, for wakefulness. And if you need to go to sleep, having bright lights while you're studying will keep you awake for a set amount of time. When the lights go down, there's a set period before you go to sleep. In fact, there's a few things about sleep, but the general idea is that the light sensitive cells in your eye or in your retina, and they're rod and cone cells. Rod for seeing color, cone for seeing black and white and motion and peripheral vision. The cone cells are very dense in the macula, the central section of the eye, where we see a huge amount of information, colour vision. However, there is another cell in the eye called a ganglion, which has got, it's not the structure of a retina, it's just a fairly ordinary nerve cell which has blue sensitivity. And this is a primal cell. Perhaps it was there before we actually had proper vision. Perhaps it was out the front there to pick up a daylight sensation. So that just happens to be the eye. In some animals, these cells can be very primitive, toads and stuff like that. They can be reconnected to other points, but we've selected in our land of mammals to have it in the back of the eye. So this is a pretty interesting thing. There is a third type of cell which is sensitive to light, but it's a general sensitivity to a general background, a blue light. It's a blue sensitive dye. And this sends a nerve signal to something called the suprachiasmatic nucleus, which is a little node of sensitive cells in front of the eye. at the back of the eye, where the optic nerves start to go into the brain. There's a little nodule of brains there. And then this sends signals out to the pineal gland. And this is true. I managed to hold an actual human brain at the Centre of Human Brain Research down at the Centre of Western Sydney University. And that is a fantastic, awe-inspiring experience, actually. It wasn't a fresh brain, it was a preserved brain, but there was nonetheless a physical brain to actually hold the weight and the size of it in your hand, was, and to see the complex structure. So these are really complex things. There's a bit of brain stem, cerebellum, cerebral cortex, the cerebrum, and cerebellum. Can't pronounce it. The bellum at the back, and then you've got a little emergency war brain, the amygdala brain. And but there's another little, there's little glands which sit down where the brain says go, emit hormones to tell the rest of the body what to do without me having to send out individual messages to every part of the body. So your pituitary gland is one which actually controls the sex and the growth and a few other things. But there is another little gland called the pineal gland. And why is it called that? Because it's shaped like a pine cone. It's actually a little mini pine cone sticking down. And I have to, and this produces at night time, in the dark, the darkness hormone. This is bed hormones. This is melatonin, it's called, melatonin, which is the hormone of sleep. And what it does is it goes to all parts of the body saying, time for sleep now, and it slows everything down. I suppose if there's receptors, it slows it all down. And this is produced only in darkness and at night. It's got a number of things, and it's a fantastic molecule. I'll give you a tour of it. So the melatonin comes in at night and grows at night, and at daytime it switches off again. And it's part of getting the sleepfulness. And if you don't have it, it's sort of a basic thing. And so if you have blue lights to start, you don't have the sleep. Say particularly up late night before an exam, studying with a lot of bright lights, trying to stay awake, you have it there, and you are sort of like trying to load a truck where at the front where deliveries only happen at the back. The actual processing doesn't happen, so the all-nighters don't happen. In fact, it's probably best to get some quiet rest before an exam, because additional learning during at that time often displaces other more deeper learning. It depends what the testing is like. So I hope this is a useful one. We're just covering it again, the idea of sleep, and I'll talk about that a bit more. Just one aspect is this book I'm reading has got pages and pages of different processes, and even the process I mentioned is only one of, I think, about three or four different processes. Some believe, some are debated, but the melatonin is a well-known sort of base understanding of sleep. And there's a little gland, and it just squirts this beautiful hormone around you, the sleepy dust around inside you, and it sets the heart rate, breathing, sets everything ready for you to go to sleep. So thanks for listening. In the meantime, keep on thinking, doing, and teaching science.